Good morning. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Brian, Judge Riley, and Judge Sleater, the Honorable Judge Jeffrey M. Brian presiding. The first case called today is A20-1549, the Gables at the Reserve Homeowners Association versus Midwest Family Mutual Insurance Company.
Good morning. As the presiding judge, I have a few comments at the outset here. First off, thank you for participating in these remote arguments. We're not in person today, but the same rules that apply when we are in person apply today. I do want to say something different than normal, which is that given that we're making these remote arguments, we understand that from time to time there might be interruptions, doorbells, pets, children, and we understand that those can be difficult to eliminate entirely. We'll do our best to keep them at a minimum and ask that you do the same. If for some reason there are technical difficulties, somebody freezes or drops off, we'll do our best to stop the clock and make sure you each have the full time allotted to make your arguments to this court. And last, please remember that the proceedings are being audio recorded. So before you begin speaking, state your name and the party that you represent. And that's also why you should remember to mute your microphones when you're not presenting an argument. And finally, we require that all parties and participants refrain from making any of their own recordings of this proceeding so that the formal official audio recording is the one that we preserve. With that, Mr. Tomshu, are you prepared to proceed?
I am. Thank you.
Go ahead.
May it please the court and good morning. My name is Mike Tomshu. I represent Midwest Family Mutual in this matter. Your Honors, this case involves a situation that has been addressed by many courts, including the Minnesota Supreme Court. I think the case law is clear that in this particular fact pattern, we have an office services representative working at an Iowa insurance company that receives FedEx packages and UPS packages and the like. A process server comes to...
Sorry, let me jump in, Mr. Tomshu. When you say and the like, are you also including in that things such as certified mail?
No. No. Well, she doesn't receive the mail. She receives packages. And so, in this case, I think the focus has been that on this fact that she may, because she gets certified mail, there may be some suggestion about substitute service that if she got certified mail and the respondent attempted to substitute serve under Minnesota statutes, that, you know, she would be the one. She's not the one. And there's no evidence that she is the one. And so I think this case is governed by the Tullis versus Federated Mutual Insurance decision. And in that case, what the Supreme Court told us was implied authority is, and we're all talking, as we well know, what's required for service under Minnesota Rule Civil Procedure 403C. And I don't think anyone's arguing she's an officer, because she's not. Her affidavit and declaration clearly say she's not. I don't think anyone's arguing that she's a managing agent, because her declaration says she has never held a position of management. I think what they are trying to argue is that she is an agent impliedly designated by the company. And under that analysis, this court need only look to Tullis. And Tullis tells us, and it's a Minnesota Supreme Court decision in 1997, that implied authority is actual authority, circumstantially proved. And it must be construed under the common law principles. And they go on to say, it's crucial to distinguish actual authority from apparent authority. Actual authority is what's required under Rule 403. What the only evidence that they've provided is an affidavit of service. The affidavit of service doesn't speak to the issues of implied authority. It only speaks to issues at best of apparent authority, because what the presumably And it doesn't matter because there's nothing in the record to even suggest the mindset of this process server, because they never provided a declaration or affidavit from him other than an affidavit of service. And the affidavit of service...
Mr. Tomshi?
Yes.
I'm looking, we've all reviewed the Tullis decision. I have it in front of me, and I'm looking at page 311 of that decision. And so the justice is talking about, thus, two significant factors have evolved in determining whether a particular individual is a managing agent for service or process. One, does the individual have the power to exercise independent judgment and discretion? Or two, is the individual's position of sufficient rank or character to make it reasonably certain the corporation would be apprised of the service? And it seems to me, in reading the district court order, that because your client filed a complaint within, I think it was 2 weeks of service, therefore Howard let them know of the service, obviously, since they answered, and therefore she had authority to accept the service because she satisfied that second part of the OR test. How do you respond to that?
Well, sure. The fact that she did notify the company doesn't mean she had authority to notify or to accept the service. If we're going to go to an analysis that as long as the company's notified, well, then service on a secretary at a law firm is sufficient. And then that's clearly not what not what's required under the case law, under Tullis. But what we have to do is look at the, as Tullis talks about, the agency relationship. What authority did the company give the individual? And in this case, in her declaration, she says she's never had authority to accept that. And what the district court did was to say, well, because she receives FedEx packages that are presumably significant, a summons is not qualitatively different. A summons is starting a lawsuit. And the mere fact that she dutifully and fortunately told people so that the insurance company could file an answer in a timely manner doesn't mean it's proper service. They still have to. And the district court spoke to the character of her position. She receives, and I'm not minimizing her role, but she receives packages. If that's sufficient to be considered effective service in the state of Minnesota, we've got a whole different animal here. In all due respect, Judge Riley, I mean, I think that what we have to do is look, as the court in Tullis and in the court in any number of the cases we've cited, in the Lang versus State Farm decision, they sued the head of the department head of human resources at State Farm, and they said that's not enough. And in a lot of these cases, there's been representations from the individuals who have actually received the paperwork saying, okay, I'll accept it. Here, what we have is completely the opposite. We have Ms. Howard who says, do you want me to get somebody who is authorized to accept this? And he said, no, here you go. And the respondents say, well, there's fact issues. There's no fact issues. There's no dispute. The only facts that we know are that the process server came to Elizabeth Howard and she said, do you want me to get the right person? And he said, here you go.
So Mr. Tomshi, go ahead, Judge Riley.
No, Judge Leader, go ahead.
Mr. Tomshi, you made reference to the judge's reference to that second part of the test that Judge Riley was just directing our attention to, and I think we're all focused on character. And my question to you is, I didn't see direction within Tullis or definition. Do you agree, number one, that it's an either or? Is the individual's position of sufficient rank or character? In other words, that can be shown in either way to be sufficient. And secondly, if assuming that's the case, if character is what the judge was relying on for the implied authority, what does that mean? Is there case law that tells us what a character of position means?
Well, I think the district court got it wrong when he's talking about character. I think the references I've seen to the character of the authority is that person of a position, and the position one of character that sufficient to be authorized by the company to accept service. Here's the issue, Judge Sleater, is if we're going to get to, well, gosh, this feels like it's enough, that's apparent authority analysis. If you know, a process server comes in to sue your former law firm, and the receptionist is sitting there and takes it, that feels to me like an analysis of apparent authority. What the Tullis decision tells us is you have to go to the actual grant of authority from the principal to the agent. And here we know that's, she never had authority. She never had a position of management.
So if you were writing the script for the best circumstantial evidence of explicit authority, which then creates the implied authority, what would it be in a scenario like this?
Well, precisely what Ms. Howard offered to do, to say, do you want me to get someone within the company that's designated to be to accept service? And, you know, and parenthetically, the respondents say, well, you know, that means we got to track down the CEO. No, it doesn't. It doesn't mean you track down. It means you ask, I have legal documents that need to have service effectuated. Can I have someone, and you identify themselves so they can fill out the paperwork? Here, the professional server is provided information direct. I'm not the right one. Do you want me to get somebody? And he goes, no, here you go. And then he just fills in a box to say, well, you're of sufficient, you have sufficient discretion in your position. Her position is office administration.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yes.
What do you think our standard of review is? DeCook and other cases talk about de novo review. And yet I'm looking at the middle paragraph on page 5 of the district court's order. And it looks like he has made factual findings that she is a managing agent able to accept authority. And do we review those for clear error? Do you think this is a mixed question of fact and law? What standard of review do you think we apply?
Well, Judge Riley, I think you apply a de novo standard. I understand the district court can make decisions in that regard, as DeCook and other cases have spoke to. But ultimately, this court has the authority to look and review de novo whether or not he got it right. And but even if you look at it as mixed law and fact, it's clearly erroneous, clearly error on the part of the district court. And he talks of conflict between the affidavits. There isn't any conflict. It's undisputed. That, I mean, what he goes on to say is he speaks to the issue of she handles sensitive and valuable documents, routing these to the right person. Well, FedEx packages, I mean, routing a check or routing a document to the right person is qualitatively different than getting a summons and complaint that initiates a lawsuit. And
Mr. Tamshi, if I can jump in, I think that the portion that you're referring to cites her own declaration to support that. I would call it a factual determination, a fact finding, Howard's declaration shows that Midwest Family entrusts her to send and receive deliveries, including handling sensitive or valuable documents and routing those to individuals who need them. So are you saying that the declaration doesn't show that? Or are you saying that that fact finding is insufficient under TOLUS, or both? Because to me, the first is a clear error. The second is more of a legal determination.
Thank you, Judge Ryan. It is a clear error. What she says is in her declaration, in that capacity, I would receive UPS and FedEx deliveries and send outgoing mail and other office administrative duties. It says nothing of sensitive or valuable documents. It says nothing of routing them. It says she receives them. And then the judge goes on to say that they entrust her with sensitive and valuable documents. The judge is the one, the district court is the one that's using sensitive and valuable documents. There's no indication. I mean, if she's receiving and then puts them in a pile, we don't know if who they're routed to, how they're routed. Nothing's in the record. So the second point is none of this is sufficient under TOLUS. It doesn't hit the mark under TOLUS. It's short by a long shot. Again, it all goes to apparent authority. There's no evidence in the record about actual or implied authority. My time's up. I'll be quiet. Thank you.
And you will have some time for rebuttal, at which point I'm sure you won't be quiet. But for now, we'd appreciate it if you would listen to Mr. Remick's argument. Are you prepared to proceed, Mr. Remick? Go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Anthony Remick on behalf of the respondent, Gables at the Reserve. Everything that was supposed to happen in this case happened. The corporation was personally served at its headquarters to Ms. Howard, who apprised the company of service. A petitioner retained counsel and answered in 16 days. I feel like we've been a little bit off target, and appellant's been shotgunning this approach a little bit too much. The actual standard of Rule 403 says service can be made upon a corporation, foreign or domestic, by delivering a copy to an officer or managing agent or to anyone to any other agent authorized expressly or impliedly. The ors in there mean you only have to hit one, and we hit one. That's managing agent. And TELUS defines exactly what managing agent is. And that's with, again, an or. There's the section one, which is, does the individual have power to exercise independent judgment and discretion to promote business of the corporation? We're not claiming that. Or is the individual's position of sufficient rank and character to make it reasonably certain the corporation would be apprised of service? That's exactly.
Mr. Remick, if I can interrupt, because I know you're going to explain why you think you fit number two under TOLUS. And that TOLUS, as you said, defines the term managing agent. My question for you is, as I read TOLUS, citing to Haighton v. Payne, predating our current version of the rule, interpreting a statute that listed officers only, and also TOLUS referring to Derrick v. Drolson, and that's where those two factors come from. My question to you is, as I read TOLUS, it seems like this is a definition not just for the term, quote, managing agent, but also to tell us how you determine whether somebody is another agent impliedly authorized, that it's the same test. Those terms are almost interchangeable under TOLUS. Do you agree that TOLUS sets forth these two factors that we look at to determine both managing agent and the other item in the list of the rule, impliedly authorized other agent? Or are you saying that TOLUS is only defining managing agent alone and not also helping us out, giving us some guidance as to what counts as an other agent impliedly authorized?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that TOLUS provides guidance on both, but it does clearly state that a managing agent, you know, the whole quote on there is, thus two significant factors have evolved to determine whether a particular individual is a managing agent for service of process. And then it goes into the two factors. So there is additional guidance as far as what agency is, but it's not required to perform anything more than serving somebody who will apprise the company of service. And that is the point of service. It's to put the defendant on notice that they are being sued. And when you deliver service to somebody who will put the right people on notice, right? What the declaration doesn't say, which is important for the other cases to differentiate, is she doesn't say that she didn't know what service was. She didn't know what to do with service. And in fact, we know that she in fact did know what service was and knew exactly what to do with it. And it got to the right place and they served their answer within 16 days.
Well, Mr. Remick, on the next page, 312 of Tullis, it says, in order to limit service to persons who can reasonably be expected to apprise a corporation of service, which is what we have here, there must be actual authority to accept service of process on behalf of the corporation at the time of service. And I am wondering, and that's preceded at the bottom of page 311, where the court contrasts people who can't, who don't fit that category, administrative assistant, staff counselor, office receptionist, have all been found to lack the power to exercise. That goes to independent judgment and discretion. But I am wondering where in the record there is record evidence of actual authority for Ms. Howard to accept service of process on behalf of the corporation.
Yes, there is actual authority in that the finding of fact that Judge Wall made, as pointed out, is that she is likely includes handling sensitive and valuable documents, routing documents to these individuals who need them. As appellant pointed out, that she does handle mail, FedEx, and UPS. The declaration is silent as to incoming mail. So it's not that she doesn't.
This is the issue that I have with that paragraph in Judge Wall's order. He finds, I think it's finds via her declaration, that Midwest Family entrusts her to send and receive deliveries, which, and then he says likely. He modifies it with the word likely. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering where in the record is that likely supported, that she handles sensitive or valuable documents, or as Tullis says, that she has actual authority to accept service of process.
Yeah, the judge uses the term likely and then goes right into his conclusion. So it's, I believe, fair to say that he found that and then based his conclusion on that. And I believe that's the difference in this case. You know, we talked a little bit about the difference between a finding of fact and a conclusion of law. I believe the finding of fact in this is the finding that she does handle important documents on behalf of the company. And the conclusion of law is, therefore, she is a managing agent. And even in her declaration, the duties that she has, and another part of her declaration is that she says, you know, it's not me that should accept service. Would you like me to go get the person? The thing is, she knows exactly what service is, and she knows exactly what to do with it when she has it. And she did all those things so that the company was apprised of service and was able to answer.
Mr. Remick, though, just to clarify, following up Judge Riley's question, if we are to review or give deference to the factual findings for clear error, would we not have to find in the record the basis upon which the judge made reference to likely? And secondly, is likely sufficient for explicit circumstantial evidence of explicit authority?
Yes, Your Honor. I think the fact that she handles FedEx and UPS documents, you know, it's not just packages, right? Overnight documents are delivered via FedEx and UPS quite commonly. So there is a factual support. There's definitely not a reason to say that it's clearly erroneous for Judge Wall to make that conclusion. And then, well,
but isn't the case law fairly clear? I'm assuming for most part in all organizations, it's fairly common that whoever's sitting at the front desk will accept a package. Would you agree that the case law, that in and of itself does not create implicit authority as that is defined by the Tolis decision. There would have to be some circumstantial evidence that the person's explicitly authorized to accept service of process, not packages.
Oh, correct, Your Honor. And think of the circumstances of some of the other cases versus this one. This is an insurance company. This company gets sued all the time. Summons and complaints are coming in the door quite often, and service can be affected by mail in this case. In other companies, it can't. So the person who receives mail in other companies might not know what a summons and complaint is and might not know what to do with it.
But you're not saying that you affected service by also mailing it to the Commerce Commissioner.
We did not affect service by mail. Our point on that is that this person receives mail and would receive summons and complaints and knows exactly what to do with them to effectuate.
Is your position that anyone who receives mail at an insurance company is a person with actual authority to accept service of process of a lawsuit?
It is a person that is of a position of sufficient rank and character to make it reasonably certain the corporation would be apprised of service, certainly.
And so point to me in her declaration those qualities that make her of sufficient rank and character.
It's not just about what's in there. There is in there her statements that she receives the FedEx documents, but also what's not in there is that she does not know what service is or that she does not know what to do with it.
So, Mr. Remick, if I could follow up on that line, you mentioned a little earlier as well that there are some things that her declaration is silent as to. The question I have is, looking at the briefs and the cases relied on, appellant's argument is that the petitioner bears the burden to show proper service. Your argument is that's not the case. And so this notion of what the affidavit is silent to, who is responsible to fill in the gaps, or better put, who fails to carry their burden if something is silent? Is it your position then that it's the appellant who has to carry a burden here by filling in gaps? And if there are gaps, we hold that against appellant?
Your Honor, it all goes to evidence, right? Process server goes in and says, this is a managing agent, and managing agent includes the definition of someone likely to apprise the company of service. So then after that, which if you just have that, the only evidence we have is that she's a managing agent. She submits a competing declaration that has some facts in there that say she accepts accepts UPS packages, accepts FedEx, sends mail. But the things that she's silent on just refuse or fail to rebut the affidavit that she is a managing agent. So in terms of, they could have, you know, they have access to her, they could have picked any facts that they wanted to do. So the facts that aren't in there are either A, not true, which I think is the case in this one, to the facts that would rebut the fact that she is a managing agent. So in terms of what she did with the document after she received it, right, that she then turned around and brought it to someone who made the decision to hire outside counsel, that the thing got sent to outside counsel and was answered. So that all goes as evidence to show that she is a managing agent that did apprise a company of service.
But that gets back to my question with regard to what's written on page 312 of Tullis, which is that in order to limit service to persons who can reasonably be expected to apprise the corporation, there must be actual authority to accept service. And so when she says to your service, your process server, do you want me to go get someone who is authorized to accept this lawsuit, the summons and complaint, what are we to do with that?
Well, there are cases out there too where people say, hey, I am authorized to accept service. And then they find out later that actually based on the qualifications and the facts, the person was not authorized to accept service, despite them saying that they will. So saying that they won't accept service doesn't mean that they actually are not a managing agent.
It's not that she won't accept service because she did take that summons and complaint. It's that she's not authorized to do that.
Yeah, and I think that's where it gets to Judge Wall's findings that she does handle important documents on behalf of the company, which makes it that she is an agent to handle important documents on behalf of the company, and including mailing, which is important in this case that it's an insurance company because mailings often include summons and complaints for an insurance company. So in that position, that is authorization to accept important documents on behalf of the corporation.
Where in her declaration does it indicate that she has the power to exercise independent judgment and discretion on behalf of the corporation?
It does not, Your Honor.
And do you want us to fill that in, or do you want to try to fill that in?
I don't believe that every person who accepts service and is a proper target of service needs to be somebody who can express their own judgment. And it doesn't need to go to the person who then hires the attorney, right? In every company, it doesn't always need to go up to the CEO who makes these decisions. Think about the world that puts process servers in and how it makes it difficult to access the courts for a common person trying to initiate a lawsuit when we have to go around and say, you know, exactly what is your job role? Will you be able to retain counsel in this case? Even though in some of the cases, the person says, yes, I can accept service, and it's been determined that it's not good enough. I think it's very reasonable for the process server in this case to know that the person who accepts incoming packages, which includes mail, important documents, is a person that would be able to get this to the person who can hire counsel and answer as they did in this case.
Thank you very much, Mr. Remick.
Yep, my time is up. Thank you.
Mr. Tomshi, rebuttal. Yep.
Thank you, Judge Bryan. All right, so Tullis defines managing agent, and it says, we think the legislature intended thereby only those agents who possess powers similar in character and importance to those possessed by the officers expressly named. She receives UPS and FedEx packages. That is not a position of sufficient rank and character to reasonably put an insurance company on notice. Keep in mind, it has been repeatedly stated that she gets the mail. The mail room gets the mail. She gets packages. It doesn't say anything in her declaration about receiving mail. It says she gets packages and she sends mail. She deposits the mail into the mailbox. Now, also,
Mr. Tomshi, if I can jump in.
Yes.
Mr. Remick makes an argument about what's not in the declaration. And I know that you've cited Shamrock for a different proposition. But in your brief, you claim that the petitioner or respondent, I should say, has the burden here. And you cite Mezenborg, which in turn cites Saucer. And if you've read Shamrock, then you know in footnote 4 of Shamrock, the Supreme Court clarifies that unlike in Saucer, in cases involving, and I'm quoting, the sufficiency of service, we have held the defendant bears the burden of proof. So would you agree that your brief is incorrect as to who bears the burden and that, in fact, the defendant, or in this case, appellant, bears the burden of proof under the Shamrock footnote 4 and the cases cited therein? And then if that's true, isn't it your burden or your client's burden to show that Ms. Howard did not have authority, as opposed to Mr. Remick's burden to show she did?
Well, Your Honor, I believe in this fact pattern and in these cases where sufficiency of process has been challenged, the burden is on the, in this case, the respondent to show that it's been effective. But even if it's...
Well, how do you reach that conclusion in light of the paragraph in footnote 4 of Shamrock, which says the exact opposite.
Well, okay. And I apologize, I don't have that right in front of me. But Your Honor, let me, Judge Bryan, let me just say this. And my time is running short. Even factually, even if I have the burden, we've met the burden. The declaration specifically says she doesn't have the authority to accept service of the summons and complaint. The declaration says she receives packages. It doesn't say she receives mail. It is the declaration doesn't speak anything to providing that Midwest Family has provided her actual or implied authority. As a matter of fact, it specifically says she doesn't and have that. And there's nothing in there about Ms. Howard having discretion, independent discretion to promote the business and independent judgment. So as the court has been asking Mr. Remick to fill in the blanks, there's no blanks to fill in. I mean, the fact of the matter is the evidence we have, if Mr. Remick wanted to challenge the veracity or the accurate, the whether or not her affidavit was accurate, he could have said, I'm filing a 5604 affidavit and challenged it. And in the transcript, Judge Wall said, should we have an evidentiary hearing? No. I told him, I don't believe these declarations are in conflict. The process server was specifically told, do you want me to get the right person? And the process server said, here you go. Under those facts, there is absolutely no evidence of unfairness or the like. And so what we're left with is who is, if someone who's receiving packages is authorized to accept, that changes the landscape in this state dramatically. And I think what this court needs to do is focus on the case law of Tullis and its decisions like Lang versus State Farm. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for your arguments today and your written submissions. We will take the matter under advisement and issue an opinion within the statutory timeframe.